You're listening to a podcast from catholicchurch.org.uk.
Well, let's move on. You mentioned Syria before, and they've obviously seen an influx of Christians from Chaldean Christians.
Yes.
From Iraq. Let's talk now, why don't we, about Syria and Iraq.
Yes, I mean, as I said, James, in Syria, I'm impressed by the level of security that Christians, Arab Christians, Syrian Arab Christians have within Syria, in different parts of Syria, in Damascus, in Latakia, in other parts of the country. But also, of course, the new phenomenon now is that Syria and also to a large extent Jordan have been two neighboring countries of Iraq that have welcomed a huge influx of Christians from Iraq who have fled this ghastly war that has been going on for 6 years in Iraq and which has been depopulating the country. There are so many internally displaced people who've lost their homes and had to go to different parts of Iraq for sheer survival. And there are a lot of those who couldn't stay in the country and had to flee. Those who fled, the few lucky ones, between inverted commas, as it were, if we're going to call them lucky, managed to find their ways to the United States or to Europe. But the overwhelming majority of those, and in those there is a very large Christian rump, Iraqi Christian rump of refugees who fled Iraq and the war and the violence that is almost endemic since the invasion in 2003, they are largely found in Syria and Jordan. And I will tell you, to their credit, the Jordanian and Syrian authorities, political authorities as well as faith communities, have welcomed those people. Now, Jordan and Syria aren't particularly rich countries. They're countries whose economies are quite weak, and yet they have welcomed these people. There are now neighborhoods, for instance, in Syria as well as in Jordan, where you can go and you can almost feel that you're in a cloned Iraq, because it's almost like the Iraqi Christians and the Iraqis in general who've recreated their neighborhoods in those refugee areas where they're living. So in a sense, what I'm trying to say is the sense of hospitality afforded by Syria and Jordan, which is very interesting, because we are talking about Christmas, we are talking about the nativity. And remember, Jesus and the Holy Family went and knocked on so many doors and nobody would open the door for them. Nobody would let them go in because they were full. They couldn't be bothered. They weren't sure who those strangers were who were coming in the middle of the night asking for a refuge or a haven. And then suddenly they had to go and find themselves a manger or a stable. And that's where basically Jesus was born. And in a sense, it's the same thing for me now, how those Christians in Iraq have had to leave and go to neighboring countries. But there is another edge to this story, and that is the fact that, again, I wonder, not necessarily from your listeners, but worldwide, how many people are aware of the number of minorities in Iraq. For instance, when we talk about Iraq, we basically talk about a war or tensions between three communities: the Shia Muslims, the Sunni Muslims, and the Kurds. Little is said or little is known about the large number of minority communities that also are indigenous to the region, that have been there. Actually, they've predated Islam and they've been there for centuries and centuries. And I'm not only talking about the Christians. For instance, the largest community is the Chaldean Catholic community. There is the Syrian Orthodox community, which has centuries-old roots in Syria and in Iraq. You've got an Armenian community there. I come, as you know, from an Armenian background. And those communities have lived there for years and years and decades and centuries. Now, how many people know of those Christian minorities? How many people know that there are Yazidis, there are Mandaeans, there are Sabaeans, there are Shabaks, there are other minorities who are in a very difficult position in Iraq? And those people are often overlooked, and they shouldn't be overlooked, because they are, in my opinion, an indissociable part of the fabric of Iraqi society. And I always say about Christians across the whole Middle East, The numbers might be small. Lebanon is a little bit of an exception, and Iran to some extent is a little bit of an exception, surprisingly enough perhaps for many listeners. But in most countries, Christians range from 10% at best to 2%, say, in Israel and Palestine. And people would dismiss them as being a small minority or insignificant. No, the early church started with very few people who took on board the Christian faith, who struggled for that Christian faith. So I always look at that. It's not the numbers, it's the quality of the faith that matters most. And secondly, and equally importantly, those small numbers of Christians are also extremely good bridge builders and reconcilers in a political world there that is divided into so many different ways. So our ministry of reconciliation is very much part of our Christian faith. And a lot of the Christians, from the leadership to the lay people to the ordinary grassroots in those parts of the world, try in as much as possible to fulfill that bridge building and that ministry of reconciliation whenever possible. Now, some people might say Harry is dreaming. Harry is not dreaming. Harry is quite well grounded into the reality of the Middle East. I know it quite well. As you well know, I've lived there, I've visited, I write extensively about it. So it's not idealism. It's only two things. One, a reality coupled with an ideal, because if our faith becomes too caught up in daily realities and we lose that ineffable essence, that transcendence that actually makes us better Christians, then I think we have lost a lot of the witness that we should have in us through Christ Jesus.
Displacement comes up a lot in many of these regions that we're talking about here. What is it like, to the best of your knowledge, for those Christian families that perhaps were in the north of Iraq and are now in Syria, as one example? What do you know about the experience of displacement?
Well, this displacement is an awful, horrible experience, as anybody might well imagine. One minute you're living in your own home with your own family. The next minute you either have to run away, flee, or you're forced to leave your home. So, I mean, imagine in the comfort of your home or my home in London, if we were suddenly told that we have to go, or if we had to go because we could no longer stay in our own neighborhoods and communities. It's very, very difficult. And a lot of these people who try to recreate a life for themselves in other parts of Iraq, if they're internally displaced, or in Syria and Jordan, or even those who go to the West, you know, they do the best they can. And this is not the first time that this has happened. I was very much involved with the humanitarian and refugee work during the first Gulf War through the United Nations Commission on Refugees. And even then, loads and loads of Iraqis were leaving the country and going to neighboring countries. But interestingly enough, the minute the conflict stopped, the minute there was some sort of a semblance of peace or an ordinary reality back into the country, most of those came back. And I suspect that if this violence, if this war, if this crazy situation in Iraq somehow subsides and we have law and order in the country again, I would expect a lot of those refugees who are now in Jordan and Syria would prefer to come back to their own countries, because living as refugees, being given rations and cards in order to go and get your bowl of rice or your bottle of water, is not what these people, who are extremely proud people with a lot of dignity, would wish to see happen to them and, more importantly, to their children.
You're listening to a podcast from catholicchurch.org.uk.